Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I am so interested today to interview Alex Brewer. A lot of you know of him, but you probably don't know him because he's doing one of the most valuable roles on the island as the editor of the Vashon Beachcomber. We are so blessed in this community to have real news, especially in an era where lots of local newspapers have gone under, and that whole concept of real news is like up for grabs. I mean, a lot of people are finding out about the world through Facebook, and we know that that is a very limited and often distorted source. So journalism is still alive, and it's alive on Vashon, and I want to first say thanks for coming, Alex, and thanks for the work that you're doing.
Oh, well, thank you. I really appreciate hearing that.
Now, I know you're usually on the other side of interviews, and I don't know that people really know you that much. Tell me how you got your start in journalism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess I'll go way back. When I was a little kid, I've always been a writer. I really enjoy writing. I would, you know, print out pieces of like little weird stories that I would write and glue them together. And then when I was maybe elementary school, I remember my parents would always, kind of complain, you know, there go the neighbors doing this thing. And so I think at one point, just to make them laugh, I created this little like mini, you know, newspaper that was like full of like stories that I invented with like angry quotes about, you know, these neighbors that they were complaining about. So just like little, it was kind of just like a fun exercise. But so anyway, that I guess that maybe is some insight into where the writing started for me. But I didn't really have an interest in journalism in particular until late in my college career. I went to the University of Washington. I started out as a philosophy major, and then I started writing for the school newspaper in the opinion section. Pretty rapidly grew to realize I did not enjoy writing. I don't enjoy writing in the opinion section. I don't really enjoy that style of writing, but I really enjoyed writing for news. And so I kept doing that. I eventually studied journalism in addition for my degree, graduated. I moved to Longview, which people don't know is a little exurb about 45 minutes north of Portland. I got my start there with my first kind of real full-time job as a journalist. I covered cops and courts for 3 years, moved back up here during the pandemic, got started with Sound Publishing. Sound owns the Beachcomber in addition to a dozen and a half other newspapers in the area. And so, you know, once you're in the Sound system, you can move around to different papers. And so, after a few years, the opportunity came up at the Beachcomber. People probably know Liz Shepard, a reporter. She was the editor at the time. She was the sole writing employee of the paper for at least a year, which was obviously a lot to put on someone. So she was looking to step back. And so I was in the right place at the right time, and I accepted the job.
Oh, that's so great. Lucky us. Did they warn you about the island? Did they say you're going to come to a community that is on an island and has some distinctive characteristics?
Yeah, I've worked in a lot of communities with distinctive characteristics, and Vashon is certainly unique and has its quirks, and so does every community. I got the standard set of information that you'd want to know. Like, it's really expensive to live out here. I'm 30. There are not a ton of 30-year-olds on Vashon, so you know, you can only get there by ferry. So, I mean, I got the basics. And I was and am in a life situation where, it made sense economically and sort of living situation for me to give it a try.
And when did you arrive here?
Fall of 23. So I've been here about a year and a half.
So you're road tested. Yay.
Yeah.
They used to have a saying that, you know, if you last 6 months, you're probably going to stay. And then people have a marker like, oh, it lasted a year. So it's great. When, just before we started this official interview, we were talking about how the career of journalism is a little different than some, that when you're a journalist, you're on not just 40 hours a week, but 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Can you, tell me a little bit more about that, because you were saying, like, if somebody comes up to you in the Thriftway with a story idea, you don't run away and say, sorry, call me at 10 o'clock on Monday morning.
Yeah, let me clock in first real quick before we continue our conversation.
Yeah,
I had my editor in Longview, incredible reporter. He Pulitzer Prize winner for his coverage of he was fresh out of school. He was like 21, 3 months into his first journalism job, and then Mount St. Helens blew up. And so, you know, an unbelievable start to your career. And he was part of a team that won a Pulitzer. So really, really talented, old school kind of journalist. And one thing he said that stuck with me is, you are a journalist 24/7. It's one of those jobs. And I think there are lots of jobs like that where you have a set of skills, and even on a day off, you may not be actively working, but a situation could arise where you need to go into journalism mode. If, you know, like I say, if someone comes up to me at Thriftway with a story idea, you know, okay, let's talk. I'm doing my job. Or if I witness something really interesting and that demands to be, have me talk to people or photograph things, I'm not going to push it out of mind just because it's not a work day. So, and I think as in an editor, you know, being an editor is more of a managerial role. And so, you know, I work more weekends than I did as a reporter, but again, that's just because I can't really let the paper go 24 hours unless I deputize someone to do it for me. I can't let the paper go more than 24 hours without me just sort of checking all the lights and all the dials and making sure nothing is, you know, about to explode. So
nothing is, but yeah, because waiting 2 days for Monday morning to come, if it's a weekend and something, mm-hmm. something crashes, something happens, that's too long a wait. Then it's not really news. It's more reporting on something that already happened. I'm talking with Alex Brewer, the editor of the Vashon Beachcomber. And one of the things that could be challenging, because I knew one of your predecessor editor-in-chiefs of the Beachcomber, is that you're a member of the community, too. And which means that you probably have a point of view when it comes to things that are happening in the community. And you have this role as a journalist. And sometimes those could be in conflict. Have you ever experienced that where you go, I really am on this side, or I really think that this is a better path, but I'm a journalist and I need to be objective?
Yeah, I think I experience that every minute of every hour that I'm at work. I think that is one of the essentially and inherently unsolvable things that you deal with as anyone who takes on the mantle of saying, I'm going to try to lay down, you know, a sort of unvarnished accounting of history. I think basically there's a few basic assumptions or principles, I guess, I have. One is, everyone is biased. I think anyone who claims they're not biased is probably
is likely
to probably be more biased than average. I think you acknowledge that you come to everything you do with the life circumstances that have brought you up to that moment, with the perspectives you had. You accept that you don't know everything about a story, and that you're going to make mistakes. You're going to have assumptions that will be proven wrong. And that is at least helpful to keep you from going way off the guardrails. And yeah, I mean, I have strong political opinions. I'm a thinking person in today's world. And so I think it's hard not to have strong opinions. And I guess as far as how I manage that in my work, I try as much as I can to, and I don't always succeed, but my goal is to try to say things honestly in a way where people will hear them. And I think a great example of trying to do that thoughtfully is writing about Israel and Palestine as an example. And so how do you talk about, you know, a horrific situation, and how do you express to people that you believe that, you know, at least in my case, I'm not pleased with how the United States government is responding to it. But how do I do it in a way where I'm not saying, where people aren't walking away thinking that that means I want to justify violence in any situation? And how do I express that in a way where I'm saying, you know, I want to, even if you disagree with me, I want to bring you into that conversation.
Yeah,
I don't want, and so maybe that means that I don't speak the way that an activist would, because an activist has a different goal than me. An activist might have the goal of creating tangible, specific change. And that might require a ferocity, and it might require overlooking details that are inconvenient for them, because they have a different, their purpose is not to represent all sides. Their purpose is to achieve a specific goal. I have a different role in these things. It doesn't mean I don't maybe want to see the same long-term outcome as the activists. It just means the part I have to play is different. My part has to involve considering all the perspectives. It has to involve giving those perspectives respect and listening,
right,
and understanding,
right,
them. And then taking the people who I think maybe I don't fully agree with and saying, I'm going to tell you something that you maybe don't want to hear,
yeah,
but I want to try to express it in a way where you can understand why I would think that. And so, I mean, there's a million examples. That's just the
yeah,
one that comes up.
No, but it's the one that you mentioned is really powerful, because also you mentioned that your grandparents, mm-hmm, escaped Austria as they were Austrian Jews during the Holocaust,
yeah,
and they escaped during the late 30s. Is that correct?
Yeah. So my dad's side, paternal grandfather's family were Austrian Jews, and so I've written a lot about my great aunt Hildy, who died a couple years ago. She was 104, and she had unbelievable stories about living through, you know, the Nazification, basically, of
wow,
her homeland, and you know, story of like her Nazi troops bursting into her home, demanding to see, you know, her father, who wasn't there, who they had already taken away. They had made like a clerical error, basically, and they went into her bedroom and started stabbing, you know, went into her parents' bedroom and started stabbing the bed with bayonets, thinking he was hiding in there.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, I think, again, this gets back to my point of your history is obviously going to affect,
yeah,
your perspective.
What I've noticed, though, with some of my friends who are progressive thinkers with a Jewish background, and it's been really difficult, because if they say, you know, there really are both sides, we hate violence, we hate it wherever it shows, mm-hmm, up, our hearts go out to the people of Gaza, then there are people who will say, you know, how dare you? How, mm-hmm, dare you represent the other side? And it goes both ways and stuff. And I think a journalist could be caught in the middle there and feel a little bit torn apart. Like, okay, nobody loves me,
yeah,
because I have to walk this line.
You very rapidly have to get rid of the idea that everyone is going to love you, or that getting people to love you is a task worth spending any time on. It's not. It is important to be trusted. It is important to try to connect with people who don't like you, because most of the time they have a valid reason not to like you. You may not agree with it, but it's
right.
There's validity to it. But if your goal is if your goal is to be liked, if your goal is to be loved, that's not useful.
It sounds like there's a certain personality type that should not go into journalism, and it might be me, because for those of us who are, you know, are who want to be liked. I mean, that's part of our operating system. But
I'm not a robot. Of course I want to be liked. And when I write something that the majority of the community really likes, that feels great. And I I cherish the positive attention. But I think to me, what you learn is that there is no, you can't contort yourself into a position where everyone likes you.
No, and nobody can. Not a journalist, not anybody can do that. And but for you, it's there's a professional integrity to it because you don't want to have your professionalism swayed by that desire to be liked. How do you approach topics where people could say, but there are two sides, and there probably are, but one side is far less factually based. You know, let's say the whole vaccine thing, and I know that there are many sides on it, but you have science, you probably have a gray zone where we don't understand as much as we think we do, and then we have sides where there are clips that are taken from research that really wasn't well done years ago that are then part of the national meme against vaccines. And then you go, well, do I have to represent it all? Do I have to represent the stuff that is not based on evidence in order to be objective? What do you think there?
Yeah, I think back to my experience covering the outset of the COVID pandemic because I worked in a very conservative rural area. And I experienced things and talked to people that would maybe be unfamiliar to a lot of people on Vashon, because these were very COVID skeptical people. You know, I recall a business and a place I worked in where they had a rule that if you were vaccinated, you had to wear a mask in the building because there was a concern that you would shed the vaccine to other people. So a totally inverted view on communicable disease and what was dangerous or what wasn't, right? So that's, and I think that was more a statement of the values of the business owner than maybe a truly, but you know, but the point is, yeah, I mean that was reflective of like a, an attitude towards, the pandemic that I thought was not as rooted in facts as maybe what we were trying to tell people. And so I covered a lot of protests, at least two that kind of stick out in my mind, where I would, you know, go up to people. And I think I always try to do it with a sense of humor if I can. So I right early days, like March 2020 or maybe April, I think the mask mandate had just gone into effect. I was working in Longview, and it's the four-way stop, and there's a couple dozen people out there with signs decrying the mask mandate. And, of course, I have a mask on, and I'm this, like, fresh-faced twiggy reporter with a notebook in one hand and a camera in the other. I mean, I look like your average kind of nerdy MSNBC type. And so I'm thinking to myself, if I approach these people in the wrong way, they will have no interest in talking to me because I already look like someone who is going to disrespect them. I look like someone who's not going to take them seriously. So I just laughed. I walked up to them and said, "Hey guys, I know this is kind of weird, but you know, I'm from the newspaper and I'm here to," and I just kind of played up the fact that like it is a funny situation for a guy with a mask on to be asking these people why they don't like masks, and I tried to intimate to them that I'm not personally offended by them not wearing masks. I'm not frightened by it. The decision to wear a mask is a personal one for me. It doesn't upset me that they're not doing it. I'm not going to ask them to do it. Thankfully, I have maybe the privilege to not have a serious disability, or maybe I would evaluate the odds differently. But again, it goes back to perspective. Like, I have the ability to connect with people, and I don't have to do that, and I have better odds of doing it. And so with that attitude, I was able to write about protests in a way where I would hear people out, I would hear their concerns. I would tell them, okay, you say that, but like this body of research on it says this and this, and does, you know, do you put any stock in that? And, you know, often I think there's a perception that everyone on the other side is this monolithical, you know, but really usually people would say, oh, I kind of get that, but I think that my research is more compelling. So, and then how do you write the story? Well, you say, these people say this, this is why they believe it. The vast body of medical research disputes it. But I never try to make if I can help it, I don't make people look stupid.
That's really great. What I hear from your story is that you were respectful, you know, with that little humor and going off to them. You weren't setting them up. Mm-hmm. You know, I know for a while there, I was watching a lot of political comedy, you know, the kind of things that you, mm-hmm. you used to see on Jon Stewart, Daily Show.
Yeah.
I love it. But they would set people up.
Totally.
And, you know, and it was funny, and I don't know exactly what was happening in the aftermath. And they would also say, we are not journalists.
Right.
You know, that's
not a
joke.
And I'm glad they say that, because it is entertainment. They're
so clear on it. But a mm-hmm. lot of us turn to them, or we used to, for our news, you know?
Right. Right. And I think, I think there's a place under, you know, there's a place under the sun for all kinds of people. And there's a place for comedians and activists to ply their trade. And certainly I would say there's tremendous value to what people like Jon Stewart do. But you have to put it in context, and you have to remember the goal of what this person's doing at the end of the day is to make me laugh. It is not to inform me. And I may be informed in some ways by watching it, but I'm getting, this person is sacrificing their ability to tell a complete story at the altar of comedy. And that's a decision, you know, that's a decision you make.
And they are clear about that. They are clear about that. But I remember it was years ago when I first, when Bill Moyers was doing shows on PBS, and he said, here are the two sources of news I go to. And he brought in Jon Stewart. And that was Bill Moyers. So, you know, it was the first time you began to go, whoa, what's happening here that people are turning to comedians? Yeah. And some of the good ones actually do inform us. But one of the questions I had, I have a good friend on the island, Eric Prine. I think he writes for The Beachcomber some. He's also got a journalist background. And, you know, in walking around with his wife, I've often said, I can't read some of the news today. It affects me too personally. And she said, well, Eric can, and he's interested, and it's part of his journalist background, that he can maintain a little wall of objectivity and take the news in without being sunk by it. A lot of us that I talk to feel just sunk, depressed, made more anxious, whatever, by particularly the national news. I'm not talking about the Beachcomber right now. Are you able to maintain that kind of you know, permeable wall or detachment so that you can read the news and not feel affected personally by it or sunk by it?
I think I'm very lucky in that I've never had that problem personally. And it's part of why my first job, the beat that my editor put me on, was sort of the bloodiest and goriest beat. For whatever reason, it doesn't bother me. I actually find I tend to have the kind of a reverse reaction where I'm very stressed out. It's stressful for me to hear about something divisive or controversial and to feel like I'm not getting information about it and I'm just getting perspectives bandied back and forth. I find if I'm reading what I deem to be a quality news source, then I feel like, all right, at least my comprehension of this is richer, and if I can understand it and feel like I have a perspective on it that makes sense and I can have an opinion on it that I can live with, then to me it's like, well, if I can't do anything about it, then I've done all I can. You know, I can't solve this international diplomatic crisis. But if I understand it and I talk to people about it and I say what I feel I need to say, it's not my responsibility to fix it. And I think the other thing that I remind myself a lot is, being anxious about a situation does not help the people experiencing it. And in fact, that is me spending energy on a solution that could be spent helping them. So a friend of mine, she was telling me about how her partner, is so stressed out about Israel and Palestine. And part of how he deals with that stress is by watching, before he goes to bed, watches hours and hours of footage from, you know, bombs blowing up on TikTok. And I remember thinking, like, I mean, one, I think that sounds extraordinarily mentally unhealthy to do that right before bed. I'm not a psychologist. I don't think you should be watching. You're gonna sleep terribly. And also, you're not doing that really because it helps anyone. You're doing it to absolve yourself of a guilt you feel. And the time that the hours you are spending watching those videos are hours that you could be spending, you know, donating money or talking with people and raising consciousness about this issue, but instead you're spending on a non-productive way. So, are you behave? I guess the question to ask, and I'm off topic from what you asked here, but the first part of this is the question I ask is this sort of, am I being productive or am I wallowing in a negative emotion? Because I have guilt and it feels good to wallow, and it feels like maybe that's absolving me of my responsibility to act. Because once you are clear-minded and you say, I'm just going to act, it helps, I think, resolve a lot of those feelings. Your actual question, which I didn't answer in that rant, is...
Oh, no, it's a good rant.
Yeah. But to your question, I tell people, you don't have to read all the news. I mean, if it's stressful and it doesn't serve you, and it makes you feel more out of sorts and confused, then it's not productive. And you don't need to know everything about every issue. I would say, I mean, I'm biased here, but I think people should read their local news. I think you should start by understanding, you know, the most you should know is about what's closest to you. You should really know your community. You should kind of know your state. You should kind of know your country. And you should understand international issues insofar as your country has a role or responsibility in them. But at a certain point, you are not responsible for everything that happens in the world, and it's not your responsibility to understand it.
And to what end
is this knowledge serving? I mean, again, if you're just torturing yourself with depressing
things, you
are one, not helping the people being harmed. Two, you are harming yourself, which is ironically making it harder for you to help those people.
Yeah, well, I always love the quote that Thich Nhat Hanh used to share about the survivors in the lifeboats coming out of Vietnam, and he was saying that one calm person could keep a boat alive.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was thinking of that we need people who are informed but can stay calm. And so I have to self-regulate with the news and all. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to Alex Brill, the editor. Are you editor-in-chief or editor?
I just say editor.
Editor of the Vashon Beachcomber. One of the things that some of us do is pick up a hobby, a pastime, an athletic pursuit, anything to kind of clear our heads. Do you have go-tos that you... For just letting down and letting go and clearing your head? What do you like to do?
Yeah, I lift weights at the athletic club, so...
You look like you have great biceps. I have to say that
you.
Because this
thank
is an
you.
Audio, you know?
Yeah, no, I don't... I'm, you know, maybe one day I'll, like, be benching, like, 250 pounds, but I don't lift super heavy, but I was a runner all throughout high school and college. Running is a very time-intensive activity, so I don't do it as much. And all the research I've seen indicates that the two things I do a lot of, I do weightlifting and then I do a little yoga and Pilates. And part of why I selected those is there's just a ton of research to indicate they're really, really good movements to do for your overall longevity and, you know, skeletal strength and muscle strength. And, you know, I think a lot about, like, as I get older, I want to sort of have these habits and routines in place. So I think weightlifting is really great. I recommend it. I don't dance at all now, but I will say I've done a lot of stories about centenarians, people who are 100 years or older, probably more than a dozen features I've written. Without fail, every single person I've met who lived to that age and was happy and healthy was a dancer.
And I so love that.
I
yeah.
do. I. If my reporting has uncovered anything, I do think dancing is like the fountain of youth.
Well, it's I'm on to it. I just came from my Zumba class, and I also had a great interview here with Molly Peach Matter, who's the lawyer who's been helping the school systems figure out what to do if Homeland Security comes on the property. And I go, oh, how do you deal with the emotional side of that? And she said, we both laughed. You go dance your heart out, you know, and then you pick up and you do the work. So, you know, dancing is great right there.
Yeah.
You're really invited. You can come to Zumba whenever you want.
Yeah. For me, it's picking up a heavy thing and setting it back down is another great way to vent some of that energy.
Sweet. What do you like most about being on Vashon?
Vashon is a very intentional community. So I grew up in Federal Way, and I was working there recently until I came out here. And I love Federal Way. I care a lot about it. I don't mean as an insult what I'm about to say about it, just a statement of fact that Federal Way is a commuter city. Mm-hmm. And often people end up in cities like it because it's convenient, it's affordable, you can get to work in Seattle or Tacoma more easily. Vashon is kind of the opposite. You don't really end up on Vashon by accident. I don't think that happens very often. People choose to be here despite all of the obstacles, despite the high cost of living, and the kind of unusual living arrangements you sometimes have to make it work. So what I've noticed is people really care about building friendships and relationships out here because it can be hard. So I have a lot of very dear friends I've made out here who have really kind of grabbed and held on to me and said, it's difficult to make friends. I want to, and that's with friends, it's with a writing club that I'm in out here. I find that I make a lot of really wonderful connections. And that's really wonderful. And because it can be such an isolating and lonely place to live, I think that's part of why you get that is it's a response to that loneliness.
Yeah, it's great. And what's most challenging about being here?
Yeah, this is a very lonely place. And I think I am somewhat well suited to a more solitary lifestyle. But it is a solitary place to live for sure. It's expensive. I make a, pretty good wage. So I don't really experience that, I think, to the degree that maybe a lot of people do. So I'm lucky in that way. It's just, I think anytime you have a place that is so isolated and that develops its own very distinct culture, it can be difficult to sort of feel like you're breaking into that culture or that you are, part of it. Not that I necessarily have that problem, but I guess I would just say
no.
That
but
the
that's
solitude.
A good. I'm thinking, hey, Vashon, remember that people who are new, it's not always the easiest place to move on into because people have their lives, they're kind of established, they have their groups, they mm-hmm. kind of know the scene here. So anything you can do to just put your arms around somebody who's new and bring them yeah. along and stuff. Anything we can do to make your life easier as editor of The Beachcomber?
That's a good question.
Because you do look for stories, right? And they don't necessarily have to come through the Thriftway.
Right. Well, actually, yeah. So let me start with the little things. If there's something going on that should be in the news, you should email editor@vashonbeachcomber.com. And you should let us know because we're a very small staff. It's me. Liz is 24 hours a week. And then that's it for the news writing team. And we have Darylin and Patsy on the advertising and publishing side. But and we have a small army of freelancers, obviously, and I think that's what takes us to the next level. But we don't have an army of people out in the community plugged into everything. So I often joke that by the time the newspaper's heard about it, everyone's heard about it. Let us know if there's something going on. Reach out, please let me know. Oftentimes I miss things or I'm getting 20 emails a day and it just, I don't get to it. I don't see it. So feel free to remind me. That's a really easy kind of small thing. And I guess more broadly, consider subscribing to the paper. And if we have more income, then we could maybe justify increasing our full-time equivalent news staff, which would make my life easier. So
yeah, come on, Vashon, because Facebook is not your place for news. We have a news vehicle, and supporting it is really important to the life of this community.
I appreciate that. And look, I know that not everyone feels served by what we do, and that's inevitable. And my hope, this gets back to the question you had about, what do you do where you want to hear from people, but you maybe think that one perspective is not as factual or is not adding as much. And like, so that happens, like I say, every moment of every day in the work I do. And so inevitably there's going to be people who think that, you know, my bias is a reason for them to not support the paper. Totally fine. That's going to happen. More power to them. I respect that. You know, what I will say is that the more help I have to do this work, the more time I have to, you know, assign stories out, to get people working, to get coverage, and to chew on these things. The other thing I was going to say as far as Facebook goes is I do think as the industry changes, inevitably we are going to see more citizen journalism, and you're going to see it on places like Facebook where people are more and more congregating and talking. And I'm actually very in support of some initiatives I've seen where trained journalists go to communities that don't have a newspaper, communities that aren't willing to support a newspaper, and say, all right, well, we'll find some people on Facebook in these Facebook groups, and we will train them and run them through workshops and train them to write the news in Facebook posts on these groups.
Wow.
And I think that's, I'm not sentimental at all about the way that we deliver this, about the titles or like the arraignment we have. I think the end goal has to be getting valuable, you know, as much as possible, unbiased information to people. And I don't really care about how we do it. We have to, you know, the vehicle of a newspaper is a vehicle to do it with a profit motive. And that profit motive is changing, has been changing for the last 25 years, and not for the better. And so if you're thinking about the future, I think you have to let go of being attached to how we do it now. And I think part of that is saying people are getting their news on Facebook. Fine. Let's train people to be journalists on Facebook.
I think that's brilliant because it makes me think about the idea of a citizen scientist, you know, citizens who can be in places that others cannot go or may not be, you know, able to cover. And a citizen scientist is trained in the scientific method, even though they may not be paid or subsidized to do that. I love this idea of citizen journalists who get a little bit of coaching, a little bit of training, a little bit of core principles that you get when you're in journalism school that not everybody has, and then learn how to be of service to their communities. I think I've never heard of that. That's brilliant. Yeah.
And I think, I mean, journalism has, you know, I laugh anytime people, hear the sentiment from people that, you know, oh, you can't trust journalists these days. They're all biased these days. And it's like, the history of journalism in this country has always been incredibly, the newspapers of yore were basically propaganda publications, you know, created by the old Democrat and Republican parties for the purpose of drumming up support. So journalism has always been subject to political forces. It always will be. It's inevitable. The work we do, there will always be outside forces trying to influence it. You accept that going in, you accept that you are not immune to those forces, and you say, I'm going to do my best to try to not be swayed one way or another by them. But I think anyone who thinks that it's particularly worse now than it has been in the past, I think the difference is there is one difference. We have a much wider variety of news sources now than at any point. It's not everyone watching Walter Cronkite at the same time on the nightly news. So it is true that there's a much broader perspective, and that brings advantages and disadvantages, obviously. But I don't think we're any more or less biased in general now than we have been at any point in history.
Well, you survived the great sea change when newspapers started cutting back so radically and things began to go digital, you know, out through social media.
I kind of came into the industry in the middle of that.
Yeah, which was in a certain sense good because you had your eyes open. Mm-hmm. You know, the early dreams of journalists from 20 years ago probably changed a lot during that period. Do you see yourself continuing in journalism? Do you still love the field or, yeah?
You know, I don't have a crystal ball, so I kind of try to live in the moment. I don't know sort of necessarily what the future holds. I have to be really honest, I have a love-hate relationship with journalism. I think a lot of journalists would probably say that.
Brilliant. Yeah.
It's an incredibly fulfilling and rewarding job when it is fulfilling and rewarding. It can also be an extremely frustrating and debilitating thing. I think, you know, for me, what has always been a frustration in this industry and what has always ground away at me is just not having the time to get to everything. And if you've emailed me, there's a 50-50 chance that I've probably said something to you like, "Hey, so sorry, I'm getting back to you late. I've been really swamped." And I feel kind of bad when I say that because it is an excuse ultimately, but I say it because it's true. And because, you know, if I could hire three more reporters and I wouldn't run out of things for them to do. And so it's very frustrating when you feel like you know, there's so much that goes on anywhere I've worked, including on Vashon, really important stories that we don't cover, that we don't get to, because I have to make a decision to make priorities and to triage what I spend my time on. And so that's, living with that is frustrating, and knowing that I can't get to everything is frustrating. But it's also the case that I know every once in a while I put a story out that really helps clarify something for people, that raises awareness and understanding, and that's sort of my happy place. Is an example I would point to is last summer I put out this really, really long article about explaining the complex zoning process behind the Seattle Indian Health Board's proposed Thunderbird Treatment Center. And I put that out, and I heard from people, you know, I can't say exactly where, but like people who are in different parts of the world who are involved in that project, who are saying, "I didn't even understand what we were doing, and I understand it better because of what you wrote." And I'm kind of bragging when I say that, but that's really fulfilling to me, to be able to say there's all this smoke and all this confusion and a lot of emotions, and I just want to try to give people some. It's not my interest to tell people what their opinion should or shouldn't be on this, and I'm not interested in doing that. Again, I'm not an activist. All I want to do is sort of build like a pavilion. I want to build a foundation so that if you people are going to fight each other, you are at least fighting each other with better information, and you are having a more productive debate, which my contribution to that is I'm going to present the facts as I understand them. That's what I'm good at. That's what I know how to do. I think that's what I'm good at. And I feel like that's my role to provide that. That was a moment where I was able to do that. And that I really, really get a lot out of. But those moments are rare, because so much of my time is responding and triaging and just, you got to get a paper out every week.
You're on deadline. Yep.
Yeah. And probably 80% of my time. Conservatively, 80% of my time each week is just accomplishing that. It's just the basic, like, keep the heart pumping, keep the lungs breathing. We got to keep this machine going.
Right, right. Well, I just want to thank you so much for doing that, because it is part of the lifeblood of Vashon. And there are many issues, like around the health district and how we will get services to people who need them, that really are that determine about whether we will stay healthy as a community. Mm-hmm. And having a source we can turn to for an understanding of the issues is really critical. So I was here this week. We were doing we were supporting local nonprofits for the Give Big campaign and all. And Beachcomber is not a not-for-profit, although sometimes you may, you know, get edgy with that. But it has that same pivotal community role. And I just think we are so lucky, and thank you so much for being willing to give part of your Saturday to coming and sharing some of your story.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.